I want you to turn with me, if you will. Let's go, first of all, to Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6. I've preached a number of sermons out of the Sermon on the Mount and building up to this over the past few weeks and left it for a while, dealing with some prophecy. But I want to go back and touch on something here tonight that I pray it'll be a blessing to you. I'm just looking at two things. I'm looking at giving and I'm looking at gates. Giving and gates. And they go hand in hand, whether you realize it or not. But the Lord said a lot about giving and the importance of giving and how that God will use giving in a great way. But also, if we give the wrong way, how that the Lord is not going to bless it if our motive is wrong. So it's all about our motive in our giving. The Lord is calling these six disciples out here at the Sermon on the Mount. Later, he deals with the Sermon on the Plain. There'll be 12 disciples, but six disciples now. He's preparing them to get ready for the ministry that's in front of them. And he's teaching them things that's absolutely contrary to what they've been taught. Now, there's nothing any more difficult in your life than to get to a place that you find out, I've been told something, but the Bible doesn't support it, and it's the wrong thing to believe. I always feel for people that's tied up in religion. And they're confronted with salvation for the very first time. Because they've got a heritage of religion. Maybe it goes back over generations. But still they don't have the assurance that they're saved and they need a personal relationship with Christ. So they have this experience with religion, but then truth hits them in the face and they have to do something with that. And that may mean going contrary to what parents have said or grandparents have said. So you're trying to balance out respecting your elders, respecting your parents and honoring them, but yet abiding by truth. Giving is one of those areas where that Jesus teaches them something that's absolutely opposite from what they have seen and experienced and witnessed. Let's begin with verse 1 of chapter 6. Chapter 6 and verse 1. He said, "Take heed that ye do not your alms before men, to be seen of them. Otherwise, you have no reward of your Father, which is in heaven. Therefore, when thou doest thine alms..." Now, watch this phrase. "Do not sound a trumpet before thee, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory of men. Verily, I say unto you, they have their reward. But when thou doest alms, let not thy left hand know what thy right hand doeth, that thine alms may be in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret himself shall reward thee openly." Well, this phrase caught my attention where they're talking about the trumpets sounding. Now, Jesus didn't just say things that wasn't applicable. He wasn't interrupted here for them to say, "What do you mean by that, Lord?" It had to be something that they were witnessing on a regular basis. So that caused me to start doing some digging and studying. And it took a long time to come up with something, and I hope it blesses you like it has me. I did not realize in all of my years of preaching on the Temple Mount and preaching about the synagogues that on the Temple Mount in particular, and then in the synagogues too on certain days, they had three receptacles for giving, three boxes, if you will, that people would place their gifts in. Now, here he's referring to alms. This goes above their tithe. They're now giving to help others because, the temple was the storehouse. And by that, we love to say, bring your tithes in the storehouse, but people don't realize the storehouse was there to give back out to people that were in need. That was the purpose of the storehouse. That's how they provided the living for the priests. That's how they provided for the poor in the community. It came through the channels of the church. And when these people started to give, you have people from all walks of life. And they all gave in different amounts. And through time, it began to get distorted, if you will. So they had three different receptacles. They were in three different locations. The location is not important because you know there's different courts in the temple area. One was a wooden box. The other was a silver box. And the Third one was pure gold, a pure golden box that they would place their money in. Now remember, the temple was a magnificent building, full of gold and silver and bronze and copper. It was magnificent to look at. Herod had spent all that he could and spared no expense on trying to restore this temple to make it something magnificent again. And it had all of that beauty. Well, each box had a different meaning. The wooden box was for poor people, giving to poor people. That was the place where the widow went to place her mites in. That's where Jesus went, because as he stood there, he wasn't just watching for how much they gave. He was watching for how they gave. Because how you give isn't as important as how much that you give. So he's standing there watching their motive of giving. And that's when the widow came up. She was poor. But that's when he also decried the others around him, and he started to tell them, you've done all of this, but look at her. There's no greater. Look at her heart. Here she is. She's given what seems like little, but to her it's so much more than what all of you have given. But then there was the silver box. The silver box was for larger gifts. When it reached above a certain point, you would put your money in the silver box. The silver box had a telecaster there. The telecaster would tell everyone how much you gave. And not only that, but they would tell your name. And then there was a group with cymbals that would clang the cymbals to say, look at what this person has done. Then there was a golden box. The golden box was reserved for the largest gifts. When you got to the golden box, there was a telecaster that was not only there, but oftentimes would be supported by trumpets in particular, and even at times musical courses. They would tell your name, they would tell the amount that you gave, and they would blast the trumpets the last time after that. They'd finally stop with all of the praise that they were giving to the individual. When they did that, everyone stopped what they were doing and started to applaud them and thank them for their gift. Because here's this person that has given enough to be in the golden box. And the trumpet has sounded saying it's time for you to clap your hands and to cheer them and praise them for what they've done. Now, Jesus didn't say they didn't get a reward. They didn't get a reward from the Father. He said they have their reward, because that's all they're going to get is. And tooting on the horn. But if you give to help others with a pure heart, and if our giving is right, then we understand we've got a payday coming. Our payday can come back in a lot of different ways. When God rewards us, it's so much better. Let me tell you, I'll take good health any day over somebody blowing a trumpet. I'll take my family being saved any day over having my name on a bronze plaque somewhere telling somebody, look at what I've done. I will take a blessing from heaven in a church service any day over someone patting my back and saying, look at what this fella has done. He's saying, remember what you're doing. You're doing for the glory of God. And that's the way you give. See, God sees it and God knows. I read the account of a couple that was poor, that it was back in the 30s. They'd taken their three children, a mom, dad, three children, invested everything they had out in the Midwest, hoping to maybe just make a living, a small living off the land. They had a farm. They dropped everything they had in that farm, but unfortunately, it's the time of the droughts and the dust bowls and all the other problems that happened through that period of time, and they lost everything that they had. Somebody told the father, there's a way to make a living for your family out on the West Coast. So they started in the 30s on that hard journey to make it to the West Coast. They got so far and they ran out of money. And they couldn't go any farther because the wife had become very ill. They were staying in just a little meager place, just hoping that she would get to feeling better and that they could travel on to the West Coast. But instead of getting better, she got worse. And in that time, they had what was called charity hospitals. It was places for the poor to go, where people would donate their time or work for very little money to take care of folks that were sick. They took her to the charity hospital, and the physician on call said, I hate to tell you this, but you're not going to survive. What you have, we have no cure for, and you're not going to survive. Is there anything that we can do for you? And she said, I would like to see a pastor. Can you please get a pastor in? And he said, well, do you need assurance? Because you know you're meeting the Lord, you need assurance in your heart. You're right with God. Oh, no. I'm right with God, but I've got some business I need to take care of before I leave. So they called the pastor in, and the pastor graciously came, gave his time. And he said he stepped into the room there, and there was the mom and the dad and those three little girls beside the bed. And the woman told the pastor of her salvation experience. And she said, I have no doubt that I'm ready to meet God. But they tell me my time is short. The kids were crying. She looked at her oldest daughter and said, honey, get in the case. They had a little tiny suitcase that just had a few items of rags inside of them that they called clothing. And she said, get it out. And she reached in and had this little homemade envelope and had just a little bit of money in it. And she handed it to the preacher. He said, what's that? She said, turn it over. On the outside was written two words, Jesus money. And she said, this is the tithe off of everything that we've made since we lost it all. $3.57. She said, I don't want to meet Jesus without a man of God promising me that it'll go into the offering plate and help somebody. That's Jesus money. I can't take it with me. But if I know that it's going there, I know God will provide for my family and take care of my family. The pastor said a few days later, he's standing in a pauper cemetery, a cemetery for the poor. And there once again is the dad and those three precious children. And he stands with Bible in hand. And he said, as clear as could be, I couldn't hear it with my ear, but I could hear it with my spiritual ear. As I look to the mountains, it's as though I heard God say, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a few things. Now I'll make you ruler over many. Enter into the joys that I prepared for you. I tell you, it's great to be blessed. It's great to have God reward us here. But my payday's coming at the end of the road. There is a time coming when God sees it all, knows all about it, and He'll reward you for it. So you've got choice. The rewards of men or the rewards of God. I'd rather have God shovel it back. I think He's a lot better at it, don't you? And there'll be a lot of things in life you'll do that you'll regret. We all have regrets. But one thing I have never regretted, I've never regretted a dime that I have invested in the kingdom of God. I've never regretted a penny that I've given to the Lord. Nobody else may know about it, but God keeps record of it. There's a payday coming at the end of the road. Now, I haven't upset you, have I? Good, good. So you got three boxes on giving. But then also he's preparing them because the sermon gets a little more stringent when you get over into chapter 7. In chapter 7, let's begin with verse 13. I'll just read a couple of verses here. Chapter 7 and verse 13. He talks about these gates. He said, enter ye in at the what? Straight gate. For wide is the gate. And broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat. Because, what's the next word? Straight is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life. And few there be that find it. Well, if you will, turn over to Luke chapter 13. Luke chapter 13. Jesus talks about this gate again. Luke chapter 13. Let's read one verse, the 24th verse. Luke chapter 13 and verse 24. Luke chapter 13 and verse 24. What's the first word?
Strive.
That word literally means to wrestle with. Like someone that's in a wrestling match that is pinned, but they're not out. And they're struggling and striving to get out of being pinned. He said it's giving your all. Strive to enter in at the what? Straight gate. For many, I say unto you, will seek to enter in and shall not be able. Well, call me elementary if you will. But if he talks about these trumpets and giving and they were literal, I know there's a spiritual meaning here. But I also know there's a literal meaning here too. If he's talking about a straight gate and a wide gate, he talks about it twice. They didn't question him about it. They must have known what he was referring to. It must have been something that they understood at that time. And it is understandable. See, it takes place near Passover. Down in the Valley of Hinnom, that's that valley that goes alongside the Temple Mount area. Down in the Valley of Hinnom, they travel up the Hinnom Valley on their way up to the temple area. When, in the times of Jesus, things had evolved until there was a co-op, if you will. Groups that worked together. There were shepherds that raised the sheep. And there were priests and Levites that were responsible for selecting sheep. And the selection process was important. Because they were selecting sheep in particular when these gates were used. They were selecting sheep 6 days before Passover. These were the sheep that would be sacrificial lambs. Well, you know as well as what I do, God wants the best. He called for the sacrifice. He described the sacrifice. It had to meet certain qualifications. Well, they got to the place for a period of time that they were just... In Malachi's time, they were just selling all types of sacrifices. They drifted from that, but now they're drifting back to a place where they have now made an appointment. The high priest would have an appointee that would stand on a big platform down in the Hinnom Valley. And they would gather all these sheep together for 6 days. All these shepherds would bring these potential sacrificial sheep into the valley to be inspected. But the inspection wasn't what you thought. They didn't send 500 priests down there and start lifting up their hoof and separating the wool and lifting up their head. That's not how they did it. On that platform, off to the side, there are two gates. One on the right was very narrow. It was so narrow that sheep had to squeeze through it, strive, if you will, to get in on that gate. To get to it and through it, they walked a narrow path. And the sheep, when they'd come together, the appointee would give the command. Both gates were open at the same time. The other gate was wide. It was the road well traveled. It was the way that sheep felt no resistance. And it's not in the nature of sheep to resist. They're not like a goat. They don't butt. They don't fight. That's not their nature. Their nature is to go along. They're animals of a herd. They follow the flock. So when they had less resistance at this wide gate, all types of sheep would pass by. But the command was this. All the sheep that come in on the wide gate, travel the wide road, the path of least resistance. All of those sheep were not worthy to be offered to God. In fact, they sold them to merchants for wool and to butcher. They were just good for killing. Because they took the path of least resistance. But if sheep would go against their nature. Would somebody help me preach? If they go against their nature and squeeze into something that's not natural for them, but something inside of them says, this is the way. The road is hard. The path is narrow. In fact, there wasn't room for anybody else on that road. They could only go alone. In fact, the Jews begin to interpret it. The only one that could be with that sheep on that path, it couldn't be another human being. It had to be God. So for them to make it, they had to have God on their side. I'm about to preach. And they squeezed through that. And when they got to the top, they were counted worthy to be used for the purpose of God and for God's glory. Let me tell you, maybe I'm old-fashioned, call me what you will, but I'm sick to death of this cheap believism that says, go the wide road. Just incorporate everybody. I tell you, at the end of life, the Lord says He's only going to let you be used for what you've been used for in this world. It's a path of death. It's a path of destruction. There's not room on the highway. Call me narrow-minded if you will. I'm not narrow-minded. I'm on a narrow path. I don't believe that you can go on a road with Buddhists and with Muslims and with every religion of the world and at the end wind up in heaven. I think this way is a straight way. I think this way is a narrow path. But by the way, it may be narrow and it may be dangerous, but there's only room for one on the path, and that's Jesus. And He's with us all the way, and He'll use us for His glory. It's a straight way. It's a narrow path. Churches need to wake up. Our goal is not to make this as easy as it can be. Jesus said, you count the cost. If you'll be my disciple, I can't tell you it's going to be an easy road. I won't promise you that. I can't tell you that every day will be easy and every day you'll feel blessed and every day you'll feel like you're so close to the Lord. The path can get hard and the path can get rough. But I can promise you this. He'll be with you always to the top of the hill. All the way. He won't leave you. An old preacher going to a little country church. And he couldn't find the church and he thought maybe he jotted the directions down wrong. He said, the farther I went, the rougher the road got. Said, finally an old farmer was out there. And he stopped and he rolled his window down and said, could you help me? Told him where he was wanting to go and told him the church that he had to be at. And he said, yes, sir, you're on the right road. He said, now I've got sad news for you. This road's going to get a lot rougher when you go on it. And in fact, you almost think that the road ends, but you just keep going. When it gets rough, don't worry about it. It's still a road. It may not look like much, but it's been traveled for years, all my life, and all my daddy's life, and all my grandparents. I just keep going, no matter how rough it gets. And he said, I promise you, right before you get to the church, it'll smooth out, and you'll know you're at the right place. Oh, it may get rough on the climb to heaven, but I'm telling you, it's going to get a lot better on down the road. Things are going to get better. Things are going to be better. It's rough now, but it's going to be smooth sailing when we get to the top of the mountain and we finally see the Lord face to face. Gates. You got to choose. You got to choose. You say, preacher, you keep preaching like that, you'll run people out of church. I'm not trying to get people into church. I'm trying to get people into heaven. And I can't go the road with you. There's only one can travel that road. There's only one that knows the way. And His name is Jesus. The longer you go in life, the more you begin to realize this way, it's straight. This way, it's narrow. I didn't say it. Jesus said. Now you know why they won't take this stuff out of the Bible. because we don't want any responsibility or account. I'm not talking about being accountable to me. I am accountable to God. And when I start to fall off the trail, there's a voice that says, don't you go there. Don't you step there. Press on. When you want to stop on the journey, there's a voice that says, you're not at the top of the hill yet. You got to keep going. You got to keep going. Giving and gates. What road are you on? Where are you headed? You say, well, you make it sound like that it's works. No, I'm making it sound like that it's real. The world hated Jesus and they'll hate you for following Jesus. But it's worth it. Why don't you make up your mind? I'm not going to take the path of least resistance. I'm not going to go the way of the world. I'm going to go the way of God.